Welcome to the Membership Machine Show, talking you through your membership website from initial idea all the way to finished product. Here's your host, Jonathan Denwood.
Welcome back, folks, to the Membership Machine Show. This is episode 82. I've got a fantastic guest. I've really been looking forward to this interview. We've got somebody that's got loads of knowledge around online marketing, building a very successful memberships website herself and running it. Like I say, she's got loads of knowledge. Also, she's just started or has launched successfully and is running a successful SaaS-based business that helps people with their online marketing. We've got Rachel Miller with us. It should be a great discussion, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, Rachel, can you give us a quick 10, 20, 30-second intro about yourself?
Hi, Jonathan. It's good to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a mom of six crazy kids. I work from home, and I started online and realized pretty quickly that, one, people have a hard time finding an audience, and two, people have a hard time with the tech of their businesses. And so I've been able to attract an audience really easily, as in I learned when I first started my business how to make content go viral and then how to teach other people how to make content go viral. So growing an audience was something that was easy for me, but the tech part was something that was a super big struggle. Because once you have the audience, it doesn't mean diddly squat if you can't convert them, if you can't convert them with like a sales page, all of those things. And what if the sales page doesn't work? The payment processor's not hooked up. The buttons just go nowhere. And I felt so stupid and so lost. And I built this audience, but I didn't have the machine to run that audience and to actually make that audience into a business. And that's then why we started creating software to solve our own problems and ultimately solve a lot of other people's problems too.
Yeah, and during the conversation, I'm going to be asking Rachel, you know, what some of the critical things she learned about launching her successful membership website. What are some of the changes she's observed in the last couple of years around launching digital products and membership? Why she started PageWheel, her SaaS solution. It should be a great conversation. But before I go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a couple major messages from our sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I also want to point out that we've got a great course available to you. If you're looking to build your membership website on WordPress, I think you should do, because of digital ownership and sovereignty. I still think it gives you the best combination of tech and ownership. We've got this course. We normally charge $49, but we're offering to you listeners a 50% discount. You can get this coupon code by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals, and you'll be able to get the coupon code. Plus, there's a load of special offers from the sponsors and other people on this page. So let's go straight into it, Rachel. So Maybe you can give some insight, some of the things that you were surprised that you, going back into your memory banks, that surprised you and you learned in the process of launching your first and very successful course. Were there some things that you feel that you could share with the audience that surprised you or you learned that became more important in the process?
Oh, I think my first surprise, well, I have two surprises. My first one is marketer's math is a real thing. So like I thought with my first launch, I made, I think it was $96,000 in my first opening launch. I had an obscene success rate with my first launch. And basically that was almost complete profit because I didn't run very many ads at that time. I didn't even know really, like I was starting out with ads, but so I had my initial launch, then I had a second launch, which did less sales than my first one. And my third launch, I had a successful launch, as in I made more money revenue-wise, but it was actually less because I got in the trap of I need to hire an expert. I need to hire an expert to run my ads for me. That expert ended up taking $26K and there was very little that they delivered for it. Because like they were testing and next thing you know, I'm like, wait, there goes 3 months of ads costs. And like, we've got nothing to show for it. So I wasted money there. I brought on staff that like would make my sales funnels for me. Well, they charged me $5,000 for these sales funnels. And again, I should have just learned the skill of making that myself. So I got stuck. I had expensive copywriters who would write an email sequence for me. She cost me $1,500. So next thing you know, I thought I needed all of these things and I added glut to my life and to my business and frankly made an albatross instead of freedom for myself because now I'm having to manage a lot of people to do things. And I thought I needed this all to be successful. And people had told me, experts I'd listened to had told me I needed this as my next step. But the reality is I needed to know what the job was before I hired for that job because I wasn't going to be successful hiring that person. And it's not necessarily their fault because I didn't communicate what I needed. I didn't have a way to follow up and make sure that they delivered what I needed. And so marketer math crept into me, which means I looked successful on paper that third, fourth launch, but I wasn't as successful as I could have been because I had this glut in my business where I basically had all these expenses that ballooned on me. And so I wasn't careful to realize what was coming. As you start getting success, don't blow it all thinking you're going to invest in your future business. Stop and take a second and say, do I know what this job entails? Have I done this job successfully? And can I communicate what is success to another person so now they can get paid to do this job? And so I needed to learn that lesson the hard way.
That's really very interesting. I think what you're describing there is building business procedures and, you know, even if you've got initial success, actually hiring staff and having the internal business structures that you need to really make those individuals successful and is a process in its own right, isn't it? But
for sure.
Why do you think you got what you know, in your own mind, thinking back, why do you think the initial launch was such a success? Had you built up a sizable, your own tribe? Have you really worked out in your own mind why that initial success? Or was it you were lucky? And you do need luck in business. Was it that the subject you were choosing, it just clicked with the target audience and you got market fit?
No, actually, I think I didn't have market fit, but I listened to my audience. So I had an audience of about 200 people that had reached out to me for advice over the years, and I put them into a Facebook group. Then I offered to those 200 people in October, like my beta launch, and said, I'm going to create this program with you. And so I started it in October, and that program went for six weeks. We had 49 people sign up for that program of that 200 people. So 1/4 of them signed up and purchased to be part of it. I charged very, very little for it. I think it was like just maybe like $100 or something. Mostly it was just to see what will people pay me and what am I going to create? And so while I thought I was going to teach them profitable blogging. So I named my business actually Moolah Marketer, thinking I'm teaching bloggers how to make more money because they're marketing their blogs and that they're but that's actually was not what people wanted. So as I was teaching the class, they're telling me, I don't want you to teach us how to do affiliate links and set up your website, yada, yada, yada. I want you to teach me Facebook because you grew this ginormous audience on Facebook. How did you do that? And so by listening to my audience and then being like, okay, in October, here's what we did to grow. And they're like, well, we don't understand that, or I can't do that. I'm too small. I can't do. So then I was like, I had to rework all of the stages so that I could fit to my audience's needs. Then they's got results. Those 49 people got insane, obscene, beautiful, amazing results. And they told everybody else about the program that then I launched in January. So that honestly, because I listened to my people, I think that's what made the success. I didn't have a huge audience. I didn't have a ton of people. I had a small audience in that sector. Now, before that, guys, I had like 4 million, unknown. At that time, I think it was only 2 million. 2 million followers on other social media platforms.
So
hey, I did this success. But the niche of the 2 million was a different niches. Those were in parenting niches. Those were in like lifestyle stuff, DIY home stuff, rock pots. That had nothing to do with growing your business. And so I had 200 people that were business people following me. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody on the other pages really even knew. My face wasn't on those websites, the viral websites. Nobody who follows those viral websites know that I'm the person behind them. So I went to those 200 people. Those 200 people, though, they all knew who my perfect people would be. They all knew other businesses. They all knew other people who were trying to grow audiences as well. And so they got the word out without affiliates, without anything, without having all the things set up. And my launch in January did 96K.
This is extremely uncanny, but also I'm very relieved what you've just said, because I've been hammering away through this podcast about building what I call, I get it from the start, the bootstrap startup world. I'm a personal friend of Rob Rowling, of Startups for the Rest of Us. I don't know if you know Rob at all, but he was the joint founder of Drip, the email and marketing automation company, which he successfully sold for about $30 million. And his podcast is about bootstrapping startups, and in his books and that, he talks about building a minimum viable product. And I've through this podcast, Rachel, have taken a lot of the concepts of the bootstrap startup world. I've just blatantly taken Rob's ideas, but I do say every time I do it, I do say go to Rob's website and podcast. And I've constantly hit that you should build a minimum viable course. It's really important to get that first batch of students. You will make educated assumptions. Probably that a lot of those assumptions won't be correct. You're going to learn a lot from those initial students. You're probably going to change the model of the course based on the input of the initial students. The course should be at a lower price to get these initial students in. It's a test of concept. Everything I've really pushed in the podcast, I was just amazed. You kind of validated all the things that I've tried to push. Do you think I would surmise that you're going to say yes, but I've got to ask you, I think that is the crux of what you've just outlined, a kind of bootstrap startup methodology. Would I be correct? Would you agree?
We bootstrapped everything, like our software company. So we went from our course, and then on the back end of our course, we had a membership. And we went from that into, I took the revenues that that earned and I saw the other problems that my people in my membership and in my courses were having, which was technology, like setting up the tech of their marketing was so difficult, like making the funnel work, making the product, making the digital product that they're going to sell, connecting all those dots. That was very, very difficult for my people. And so I loved taking the money from that one business and then using that to build and fuel and fund and grow our next business, which is a software company. And it is a start bootstrap. We don't have a single investor in it. And it's been tight and it's been hard because like software is pretty expensive to build. So bootstrapping that is definitely, one is hard and also two, like super rewarding because you did it all by yourself. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I also think, you got to accept that if you take investment, angel investment, or if it's a larger software company, VC too early, you're going to have to give away so much equity in the company and literally take effective control and ownership away from you. If at some stage you do need it, if you can avoid taking that kind of investment to a later stage, your ability to keep more of the equity and control of the company is much higher. But what are some of the... Because obviously we can all be frogs boiling in water. We can't see how things are changing. So over the last couple of years, I don't know if you thought about this, but I've been thinking about it. And because of your success and experience, I thought you're the right person to ask this question. What are some of the things you've observed changing in the online marketing world over the last couple of years? Have there been some trends that have been on your radar that you've been thinking about that you'd like to share with the audience, Rachel?
Automating and AI is the biggest one. That's actually changed the way courses are made, the way courses are delivered, the way courses are sold, the way we attract an audience. Something that used to take us 8, 10, 15, 20 a month to create can now be made in minutes. And that means that there's a lot more content out there and means we need to connect more because we can automate so much else. So we can take what used to take hours to do and boil it down into minutes. So now that means everyone else is doing that too. So we need to step our community game because of all these automation tools that make life easier for us. But means that we have a lot more competition coming.
What about the rise of TikTok and other kind of video-based platforms?
That's not new. That's been around. I mean, people have been making video content for forever. Mm-hmm. TikTok's been around for like 5 years now. I wouldn't call that a new thing. Right. And frankly, even like the social platforms, some of them are moving away from video. So like Instagram and Facebook have less video going out on their feeds than previously. So I think video is one type of content, but people have always been the same. They've always wanted video. They've always wanted photos. They've always wanted conversation starters. I don't think that's changed.
Why do you think Facebook and Instagram, why they are reducing the push on video? What do you think is around that, Rachel?
I think it's cost saving, to be honest. They can deliver more content in someone's feed when it's not a video. So video takes longer for someone to consume and it takes a longer bandwidth back in the back end. And so their ad costs, their ad profits have gone down. So they cut part of the business that was the most expensive, and that's organic video. Because that takes the most bandwidth and takes the most time of someone to consume it. So that's gone down in reach. And I think it's just a cost savings issue.
I definitely, I think Facebook and their ability to use AI, because obviously they were on the ropes a couple of years ago connected to what Apple had done to them. And a lot of people were saying they weren't getting the results. And there was some truth to that.
Well, yeah.
But they've been able to use...
The Analytica issue, because... What Congress did in Cambridge Analytica, people were taking Facebook and were doing like illicit targeting and breaking people's privacy with it. And so Cambridge Analytica happened, which then caused Facebook to respond to that by cutting down our ability to do as much targeting, Which then Apple then said, well, you're going to cut this far. We're going to cut it even farther. We're going to make it even more privacy, to which Facebook is like, well, wait a minute. And so it's just been a big giants kind of competing over holding the data so marketers can't ruin it for everybody. But again, that while yes, iPhone 17 and all of those Apple changes affected Facebook, they also affected every different type of marketing, as in...
Yeah, true. But what I was going to say to you, Rachel, is that Facebook, through a massive investment, have been able... I might be totally wrong, but they've seemed to be able to use AI to recover a lot of that problems and made their advertising more effective.
I don't know.
No, you wouldn't agree with that.
No, I think Facebook's doing AI all wrong. Facebook's going in and saying, like, summarizing people's... like, I was on a thread this morning where my friend was like, what do you think about XYZ? Isn't that crazy? And instead of me seeing the comments from users, Meta decided to have a summary of people's comments. Like, how is that helpful? The whole purpose of Facebook is that you're face-to-face with other people.
Oh, yeah, I see. I would agree with you there. That would be... If they want to go down that route, that's going to be awful.
That's what they're doing. that's what you thought we wanted today. So I don't think AI is helping Facebook. I think it's helping businesses on Facebook be more successful. I don't think Meta is doing AI well. Meta has a huge trove of content that they could use to make AI engines a second AI engine, like a natural speaking AI engine. They could do a lot of cool things with that, but I don't think they're doing, that would have to be a separate company, I'm guessing, because the actual core function or the core purpose of Facebook is people connecting with people. And I think if they continue down the path of adding a lot of AI to that, that'll actually dilute their ability to keep the market share.
But I was fascinated about your observations about doing this minimum viable course and getting that first audience and really listening to them and, you know, developing the course, changing the course based on their inputs.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating it should be really, shouldn't it? Because I think that's the core thing in bootstrap startups, isn't it? It's finding market fit. It's so difficult, isn't it? But if you do find it, everything else becomes a lot easier, doesn't it? And I think it's the same core message when it comes to membership website. It's finding that key fit to a small but large enough audience so you can run a successful business, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if I did market fit as much as I found my audience. And once I find my audience, I ask them, what do you want? So which is market fit.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I like looked at my product and then tried to fit it into somebody.
No, it is different, but I think the core concept has a lot of overlap.
For sure, yes.
All right. So,
what do you think market fit means? Like, how do you find the market for a product or membership?
Well, I think you can read it. You know, I have a bit of dyslexia, so I like listening to books and podcasts and watching videos, and I do read a bit. But it's not my greatest strength. But I do like ideas as well. And I've always liked business, not just because I'm making money, but the actual game, the intellectual game of working things out. So it's a bit of a hobby plus a passion, really, Rachel. But I think it changes. I think it's not there's key elements to it, but I don't think people's process in finding market fit, you can't just copy somebody and apply it totally to a different market, because I think each market has slightly different dynamics that makes the path of market fit a bit different from each scenario in each market. Am I waffling, Rachel, or is there any...
Yeah, I mean... I know that the type of personality that I am, if I tried to copy somebody who's like snarky, it comes across kind of off-putting, but...
Are you talking about me, Rachel?
Yeah, no, just me. I can't. I try to be funny and I can't be funny. So it's like one of those things where like you have to kind of match yourself and your skill set to your audience and then what your audience is looking for. So like there's like a personality dynamic that you kind of like a Venn diagram. You got to fit all the Venn pieces together to find that perfect spot.
Yeah, I think I was waffling a little bit there, but I think the core thing is this is why you've got to keep your costs down, which was linked to your second and third courses where you were saying you're bringing all these experts in, is that you've got to keep your costs down because it's a process. I think a lot of people that utilize the WP Tonic platform, Rachel, expect their first course to be a huge success. They're not going through the process that you went through, even though I try and influence them, is that this should be your minimum viable and you should get this input and you should modify the course depending on what your students tell you. They get disheartened or they spend a ton of money bringing in a load of initial experts in, and they burn the whole budget and they get disheartened. And they, like, I've had people use our platform and over a year they still haven't launched because they're building out these elaborate marketing automations, everything else, getting the logo, they're going through about 20 different logos, blah, blah, blah. And I keep saying to them, well, you really just want to launch a minimum viable course and get this input. And I've come to the conclusion with some of those people, it's easier to go through the process because you're avoiding the day of reckoning when you're actually launching the course and they are not listening to your advice. If they don't get that huge success initially, they just give up. But that's only...
Part of that's because they spend a lot of time building it. So if you spend a lot of time, like you, it becomes your baby instead of it being a test.
Yes.
So the reason why a minimum viable product works, or get a lead magnet out there just to see what the world says about this, like just get something out there. The reason why that is a better philosophy is because it's such a small amount of investment with your time, with your energy, with your reputation as in sales that you've made. So you can test to see if something works with something small. If it doesn't work, throw it out and make a new one. That's actually why we made PageWell, is because people were spending weeks, months, sometimes even it was insane amount of time building their lead magnet, their course, their things without actually putting it out to the world. And it was taking them hours and weeks and months and literally like unbelievable amounts of time to do this. Whereas what if they could get it up and running over a lunch break and they could test it? Now, when it fails, you'll be like, okay, that failed. Go spend another half hour and make it a little bit better. Oh, it failed too. Well, guess what? Believe it or not, out of 10 businesses, 7 of them are going to fail. So you have to try 10 times to find the 3 winners. So you're now, instead of it taking 10 months to make one product a month and figure out what your audience wants, now you can get your products up in 2 days and say, okay, I made 10 products in 2 days. What do people want? And so now you can test really, really quickly. And when you don't have a lot of time that you invested into it, a lot of money you invested into it, it's not your baby. It's just a test. It's not like, it's like a mug. It's a disposable thing. I drink a lot of coffee. So I have two.
We're joined at the hip there. I drink gallons of it.
I know, gallons of it. So here's my cups of coffee. It's not something I'm attached to. If this bug broke tomorrow, I mean, I'd miss it, but I wouldn't like lose anything. Does that make sense? Because it,
oh, it does.
A low investment of money, low investment of time, low investment of energy. So that's the same type of situation where if you can make it cost the amount of time it takes to make a cup of coffee, and the amount of money it costs to make that cup of coffee, now there's no like emotional attachment to it.
Yeah, I think that was a great observation, actually. Thank you for that. So PageWheel, before we go for our mid-break, PageWheel, you built it, you've been running it. What are some of the key things that it does or your user base that you're most proud of? What are some of the key things that really still wrap your cage that you're...
So I love that question. So whenever you're doing a podcast episode or you're making a YouTube video or you're have a TikTok lesson that you're teaching, it's really, really important for us to not just have that audience on a podcast that listens to us and never does anything, or on a YouTube video who watched us and never took action, or on TikTok where they like just, we got into their scroll feed and now we're just part of their scroll, right? We need them to convert to become a buyer. But asking them to buy I was selling my course for $1,000. Asking them to buy a $1,000 course outright, you just don't get a sale because it's too much of an ask to ask for someone who has no clue who you are. What helps us to make those sales later is that we have a lead magnet or something that we can give to them as a gift of value that they learn we're valuable. We love them. We take care of them. We bring like results to their life, even when it's free. And so I wanted a way for me to grow my email list so I can have people know, love, and trust me before I come to them with my, hey, sign up for my $1,000 course. And how I did that was I was making lead magnets and I put them onto an offer page and then a thank you page. And I have a video on there explaining who I am. And then I would put them into my launch sequence where they would then find out about my program and purchase from me when the course opens. So that whole sequence, though, would take weeks to make each lead magnet. And so I needed a tool. What we do now, we'll make your workbooks to go along with any type of video, a checklist, cheat sheet, guidebook, framework, whatever it is, you say what it is. It will make that for you in as little as like 3 or 4 minutes and then put it onto a sales page with the wording already written because it matches what you created in your book. And so now you can say, hey guys, you want the cheat sheet that goes along with this TikTok video that I just did on the 5 ways to have a more productive life? Awesome. Click below my links in my bio. Come sign up. I've got my cheat sheet for you. It's waiting for you. And now you have them on an email list that you can remarket to and convert them from a stranger into a buyer.
And that's using AI.
Yeah, it builds it in like literally minutes because you just, AI knows like the checklist, the common checklist. And then you can go in and you can edit it in any way, change the colors, make it different, yada, yada, make it yours. But AI writes like, what do you need in cheese? Yesterday, I helped a food blogger. She was doing a recipe about jalapeno cheese poppers. So it's like jalapeno stuff with cream cheese wrapped in bacon, yada, yada, yada. That's kind of the same.
It sounds yummy, but it also sounds semi-perverted as well.
It's one of those things where they're super tasty. And the internet, there's only so many different ways to make them. They're a really common dish here in Texas.
Well, the mind boggles how many calories. There must be one in
eight. Oh, yeah. But that list of what's in the jalapeno poppers, it's a very standard list of what's going to go into it. So you don't need to remake the wheel to create that recipe. You could just ask ChatGPT to create the list for you. But when you do that, now you still have to put it into Canva. You still have to design it. You still have to put it onto a sales page. Instead of having ChatGPT and AI come up with the list, instead just be like, okay, hey, can you just make me a cheat sheet of different recipe ingredients I could use to create my jalapeno dish.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. You made me hungry, Rachel. There you go. I think it's time for our middle break. It's been a fabulous discussion so far. We've really covered a lot of material in 30 minutes. We're going to have a break. I've got a few more questions. Rachel seems to be pumped up with her coffee and she seems to take my humour in her stride. It all looks good. Should be a great second half. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. It's been a fab first half. We've covered a load of stuff. Just want to point out the Membership Machine Show has a great Facebook group page. It's totally free to join the group. Go to Facebook, put in the Membership Machine Show. We have a mixed bag of people trying to build a great business membership website with developers and designers. So if you're looking for any advice or a great community, it's a great resource. I'm always on there, plus Kurt, my lead success team members on there. We love you to come across and join us on that group page. So on we go. So what are some of the two or three of the biggest mistakes that you've seen, regular patterns around online marketing with maybe a focus on membership but not and community? You know, you've helped loads of people. Then I would have thought there's some clear patterns that you've observed. Maybe you could share them with us.
Patterns for?
Well, you know, some of the key mistakes that people make, you know, you see groups of people making most often about launching a digital product or a membership site.
So one of the major problems is when they hire too soon, hire too many staff. Yeah. I see that with pretty much every business that I ever coach. I also see them talking too much about themselves instead of their audience. If you make your audience the focus, like you're going to grow. But if you make it all about what you solve for someone, people don't really want to know that they have a problem over and over and over again. So marketers tend to like really just kind of hound in on, here's your problem and I have the solution. And frankly, people don't know who you are enough to trust you when you want to talk to them about their problems. So that would be the biggest like branding issue I see. Business one is they hire too soon. And then with memberships, I think a lot of times as we build our membership in such a way, like for me, I've noticed this in my life and in my membership is I built my membership, but I didn't consider my own personality. And so my membership is not growing. Like I grew my membership to 1,000 members and then I've let my membership kind of not die. It's still active. We're still there, but I let it drop down to 650 members and I'm okay with it dropping down to 650. And I don't mind even if it goes a little lower with my training program because I didn't build it with my personality in mind. It's still there to help people, but I got bored and I didn't build it with enough flexibility. I built it with time freedom as in I only have to show up a couple hours a month to keep going, but I didn't build it with how do I keep Rachel, myself, involved in loving this and thinking about it and building it and growing it? So I didn't build it with my personality in mind.
Well, I think that's been very honest. You know, I forgot which Greek philosopher said, you know, the real challenge in the human condition is to know oneself. Something I've struggled with because, you know, I think how others observe you isn't the way that you think people observe you, is it?
That's so true. That's actually very, very true. Like the image, that's so, so true. Yes. Your image of yourself and what other people think of you is two completely different things for sure.
Yeah, it's quite shocking actually, because I actually can't listen to my podcasts. I can't listen to them. I can only listen to the beginning and maybe a couple of minutes. I cannot listen. I think I'm a useless interviewer.
That's not true.
No, I think I'm absolutely hopeless. But my friends say that I'm quite entertaining and most of my people that I've interviewed have agreed to come back on the show, so it can't be that terrible. But I just can't listen to it. I can hardly watch a video that I make. I just find it horrendous. But that's just me. I think.
What I love though is you still show up.
Well, I think that's the other key thing. I have improved over the 8 years. It would be very sad if I hadn't, wouldn't it, Rachel? The other thing is, I was brought up on Radio 4 and English radio. I love podcasting. And I love communicating. So I don't find this too much like work, But I think the other thing I've noticed, and before we go on to the next question, I just wanted to see if you've observed this. I think with a lot of people, and it's linked to what your comments about the baby, is that people think business success will come by making things as complicated as possible. And I've learned the hard way, the real skill of business is making things as simple as possible. And there's an art to it. I think any fool can make things complicated. The real genius of real natural entrepreneurs and successful business people is to make things that are complicated easy. And it's the same with copywriting. I've learned this the hard way, is that there's a lot of copywriters out there that got English majors and MAs, and they can write lovely material, but they write reams of it. But there's few real sales copywriters that can really take a business concept and really give you a great tagline or give you a paragraph. And on my homepage, I've worked on it, and I've got it to a stage where I think the essence of what WP Tonic is in the tagline and in the bottom, the paragraph of text below the tagline. I'm still not 100% happy with it, but I never will be, but I don't think it's in a bad spot. But this is a skill, and most people don't have it, do they?
No, I don't think they do, no.
And why do you think most people delude themselves that complicating things will make the offering better rather than realise it's a process of simplifying? Is there a word? Because I tend to make words that I feel that should be there. Is there a word, simplification, or have I just...
I don't know about civilization, but I call it simple scale, stupid, complicated fails. And I don't know where I first heard that, but the more complicated you make a system, the more it's prone to break. And the more it's prone to break, the more you're not going to see success happen. And so I've seen so many fancy funnels that have an upsell and a downsell and a cross-sell and da-da-da-da-da. And guess what? Those all break because they've got too much crap on them. I actually just had this yesterday. We made a sales, no, not yesterday, it's the day before yesterday. We made a lead magnet and we promoted it. And when we sent it out to our audience, it was complicated enough that my audience, when they got to it, they were like, okay, I get this and this and this and here's that. And what do I do? And it actually converted less than the ones where we are like, hey, we got one thing for you and this is what it is and here's why you want it. So like, sometimes, and even the experts, like the experts like myself, we add more friction to our life, as in we're going to add this layer of complexity and this layer of complexity and this layer of complexity. And when we do all of those things, we actually set ourselves up for failure because we've made it too complicated. We're simple, simple can scale, and complicated fails.
Yeah, I'm not an active consultant now or website developer, but I remember it was about 7 years ago, and I had a lady and she had built out quite a successful membership-focused business in a niche. I'm not going to go into any more detail than that. And she had built out a load of marketing automations in ActiveCampaign, and she was looking for advice. And we had a Zoom and she opened the ActiveCampaign builder, and I've never seen anything like it, Rachel. And I'm not the sharpest tool, but I don't think I'm the bluntest either, Rachel. And I've never seen, she had no idea what half this stuff did anyway, because she had left it about 6 months ago and I've never seen such complicated sales funnels and you know what ActiveCampaign is like, don't you, Rachel? You know, you can go berserk in it, can't you? And she had gone berserk in it.
Well, when it's complicated, it tends to fail. And so for our businesses, ask yourself, what can I take friction out of my day? So as I'm making my membership, as I'm making my business, as I'm creating, what friction can I remove? So like for me, I had a complicated system. That's not true. I hired a girl to help me create video content. And so her idea was she's going to make this huge bank of all these videos with all these like things. And then we can cut and chop and put them all together. That's a complicated system. Simple system is you take up your phone, you turn it on, you film yourself, you turn it off, and you post it. That's simple. Simple scales, complicated fails. Now I have this gal who I paid her hundreds of dollars and she made this bank of videos for me that I will never do anything with because now I have to edit them and I have to open it. I have to resize them. I have to da, 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 da. I have to create the storyboard for, but no. That's not simple. Simple scales, complicated, it fails.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't overemphasize this, but I'm a great believer in the 2080 principle.
2080? What's that?
2080. That, you know, 20% of your activity, 20% of your clients, 20% of your products really generates 80% of your income. And it's also like my attention. I'm quite happy. There's a certain amount of activity and focus that will get you the maximum return. And then it's a bell curve. You know, if you want to become a true expert on it, fair enough. You know, push it. You got to really push it. You know, this famous 10,000 hour concept.
That's Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, I think at the beginning of this conversation, you were talking about you got to know things before you bring the expert in. Well, I don't think to get enough knowledge so you can judge an expert so they're not ripping you off. You don't have to do the 10,000 hours, but you just got to do enough so you get that maximum sweet point in that bell curve, you know. So I'm a great believer, you know, use a tool, use something where you're getting that maximum return and then bring somebody in or don't bother because I don't need to become an expert. I'm just trying to get to the level where I'll get the maximum return. Is that making any sense, Rachel?
I just have been burned by it. So, I like the idea of you don't need to be an expert in everything, but at the same time, as a business owner, you care about your business more than anybody else does. And hiring without a system that they can implement in you.
I still chug them.
And so you have to do enough of the work. You have to do enough of the social media work so you can hire somebody to do your social media. If you're not a social person, why would you expect to hire somebody who's a social person? You're probably not going to. You need to actually become that person a little bit so then you can know who you need to hire. If you don't know what a good sales funnel is and you've never made one, you've never made a good lead magnet before, if you're going to hire someone to build one for you, you're not going to recognize it and you're definitely not going to be able to. It's kind of one of those things. I just lost the most money. Most of the money I've lost was by poor hires.
There we go. No, it's no problem. Question five. Obviously, you built a whole product on AI, and I use a lot of AI myself, and I've found it's helped me enormously. I also feel that in corporate America, I think it's the total bubble in some ways as well. I think it has a similar taste to 2000 around the internet. Obviously, the internet, web 2.0, I went through that through the use of JavaScript. And obviously, at the core of the internet, it has changed business and the way that we communicate and everything. But in those early years of the 2000s, it was a bubble and there was a lot of people who were drifters. And I see the same thing with AI, is at its essence, it will change business, it will change things. But I also see a lot of drifters a lot of speculators, a lot of nonsense being spoken about AI. First of all, would you agree with that or not? And what's your own sense about where AI is and where it might go in the next 18 months?
Well, I think I love AI because I love it so much. I like built businesses on it. That said, I do find it interesting. A lot of the AI experts are really just prompt experts. And I think prompt engineering is a bubble that's going to pop because AI is only as good as the information you give it. So AI prompt engineering is important, but everyone will become, that will just become the norm, is that everyone should be a prompt engineer. So everyone will become, how can I create better prompts for my business for where I am right now? The issue though is not, can I write a better prompt to get more better data, like better responses? Like, yeah, I can write better prompts to get me a sales page. The problem is I still have to have a human right now copy that into my sales pages. That's, I think, the game changer that AI will be. And that's who I think the real AI experts are the people who are automating the AI responses. So humans don't have to just know what to do with this digital horde. Basically, what AI is doing right now is giving us thousands and thousands of pieces of content that we don't have anything to do with them. Like, now we need to take those random blurps and now implement something on the back end of it. So if AI goes through and goes through your tax statements and tells you where there's a red flag in your bookkeeping, okay, AI can actually do that. But now somebody has to go into the bookkeeping and here's the red flag. How do I fix it? Well, if you're like me, I don't know how to fix that. So that's where a human who can do AI is more important, a human who can automate the AI, or a tool that can go in and say, okay, AI, give us this data. Now implement the change based off of that data. That's going to be the game changer. And the people who are doing that, who are making the tools that actually work, those are the real true AI experts. So not the prompt engineers.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. Thanks for that, Rachel. So let's go on to our last question, one of my favorite. So if you had your own time machine like H.G. Wells, or if you watched Doctor Who, the TARDIS, and you're a Time Lord, and you could go back to your early days where you were starting your online journey of success, Rachel, what would be a couple of things that you would love to be able to advise your younger self that you maybe can share with our audience?
I would tell her that she's doing okay and that every step is a step in the right direction. Because I think back to the myself right after I had, I think it was my first or second child, and I had them back to back. And one of them had where they were allergic to like milk and soy and eggs and like everything you could imagine they were allergic to. They'd break out in these horrific hives. And I would go back to that self who could not afford the fancy formula that my little girl needed to eat. And I'd be like, every step you take is in the right direction. Because at the time I didn't have money. I was sitting in my house like looking like, what is going on? I can't even afford to feed my kid. And I did the first thing that was right in front of me. And that was getting a job online and writing copy for manuals for a company that was creating like appliances, home appliances. And they were a Japanese company. And so I was writing the manuals for them. Nobody really reads the manuals on how to work your blender. If you buy a blender, you don't care what your blender does. You don't care. It was these things that a button that would take your blinds up and down. You don't really care how the blinds work. You don't need the manual for it. Nobody reads that manual. But at the same time, so I didn't feel like it was filling a purpose, but it was a step in the right direction. And that step taught me how to write quickly. That step taught me how to break down information into steps, like into instructions. That information taught me how to negotiate with work on remote, work with my kids. So there's a lot of, everything was a step in the right direction. And if you keep taking the next step, you don't need to have a 5-year plan. You just need to have a plan to get out of the hole where you're in with one step up. And if you can do that one thing, you're good. So I'd go back and tell my person, you're okay. Just take that next step.
I think that's very insightful, actually. And it's linked to a couple of resources that have come to my mind. Yesterday, I was doing... I do a lot of walking in the morning and in the late evening. And I was listening to a podcast, the Tropical MBA podcast. yesterday morning, and they were talking about how do you get real change in one's life, or how do you promote real change in other people that you are mentoring or trying to help. And this is this idea of this conversion on the road to Damascus. Sometimes it happens, but they were saying they think real change happens in micro steps. And I think that's what you were outlining there. But they were also saying that a lot of people do kind of follow micro steps and then they convert back to their old ways. Obviously, you learned and moved on. And they said one of the things that can help in not that happening is mentorship, having community, having a group of individuals. And that brought me to a book that highly influenced me, and it's a book called Change or Die.
Oh.
And I can't remember, I think it's Alan somebody, I can't remember his name. And it, I've read it 3 times. I'm going to share something with you. About 3 years ago, I was 330 pounds. I'm 6 foot and I'm a pretty big guy in bone structure. But I was 330 pounds. Now I'm 200 pounds.
Way to go!
And that's through diet and walking and the diet becoming more than a diet, becoming the norm. And in this book, it describes like 4 different areas that tremendous change has happened for different groups of people. And one of them, and one of the first chapters is about why people that have major heart attacks and their surgeon and doctor says you're grossly overweight. And if you don't lose a load of weight, you're going to have another heart attack. You've had a massive bypass operation. And in this book, it describes that the majority of people after 6 months go exactly, they lose weight and then they go exactly back or gain even more weight than before their major operation. And it goes through what the mental process of that is. And it, like I say, it goes through other examples, why people have patterns of behaviour that don't serve them well. And then they go, and even though they try and fight it, they go back to that that pattern of behaviour. It's quite fascinating, really, isn't it, Rachel?
Oh, I just looked it up. It looks like a great book. I can't wait to read it.
It is quite a mind changer, actually. It's not very big, so I don't read big books. Well, the only big books I've read are from Russian authors. They seem to write very large books, the classics. But they're the only ones I've ever... Rachel, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I think we have covered a lot of stuff in an hour, haven't we?
I have. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Rachel, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and some of your ideas, Rachel?
They can find me as Rachel Miller on Facebook or pagewheel.com. That's my new project.
That's fantastic. We will be back next week with either a guest or my regular co-host, Haroon, talking about more around WordPress technology. But we've got some great guests coming up in July, like Rachel. I've rustled up some really interesting and influential people like Rachel. We will be back next week, folks. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Membership Machine Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and leave a rating to support the show. Until next time.